Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name's Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith. And today we are joined by Dimitri Serkin-Nicolaou and Justin Goldberg of Demo's Pizza.
How are you all doing today?
Oh, doing pretty well.
Holding it together, Daniel. Holding it together. Very excited to be here, though.
I'm so glad. Yeah, no, we were talking about... There's only probably a couple times in the history of this podcast where I've been, like, starstruck. And of course,
it's about pizza.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, so, like, I'm going to contextualize. You know, pizza is probably my favorite food. I grew up on Long Island, New York. Pizza's a big deal culturally and in my life. And then on top of that, like, I'm vegan. So, like, I have one place that I go to in New York. Do you know Screamer's Pizza? Does it sound familiar?
That does sound, actually sounds familiar.
They're very... Instagram. You would... Yeah. Yeah, they have a very solid Instagram. Yeah, they're great. So, living in Chicago, I think... I'm trying to even think now when I first learned about Demo's. Because at this point, it's like... Y'all are an institution. Like, how long have you been in Chicago?
Yeah, should I give you a little bit of a history for the story?
Yeah, sorry. Let's, for people that don't know, what is Demo's and how long have you been in Chicago?
Okay, great. So, I opened what was called Ian's Pizza in Chicago. I worked at a place.
I'm from Milwaukee.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So I went to school in Madison.
Okay, cool.
UW-Madison. And when I was 18, like the first day of school, it's like welcome week, you know, like what welcome week is at Big Ten colleges. Yeah. Yeah, well, and of course, at the beginning of welcome week, you also need to find pizza. And I found Ian's Pizza and I went in there and I like remember running back and forth around the glass and looking at all the pizza slices and all the options. I was like, this is amazing. And so within the first week, I was like, I'm going to work here. I got a job there and I worked there all through my entire sort of college career. Mm-hmm. And I learned how to make pizza, how to sling pizza, how to make customer service, how to build training manuals. I left as the general manager there, and I decided that instead of pursuing something with my majors, which I finished, I was like, I'm gonna open a pizza shop. And so I opened Ian's Pizza here in Chicago. I took Ian's from Madison and I opened it here. And I did that for about 2.5, maybe 3 years. And at some point around then, they decided that they wanted to move in the direction of a franchise. That was sort of the business structure that they wanted to exist in. And probably about a year prior to that, I had bought out the store from the people that had originally invested. And I kind of like looked at what it was that we had done here in Chicago with Ian's. Mm-hmm. And I was really proud of it. And I felt that if we were going to stay as a part of a franchise, that might inhibit our ability to do the things that was good for the people that lived in Chicago, the people like that were our customers and the employees that were working with us for the team. And so I said, hey, I'm sorry, that's not a business model that we can get on board with. So we then did the sort of painful separation from Ian's. We rebranded as Demo's in the same location, same thing. Like I said, I'd already owned it. And that was maybe 2011 or 2012. Mm-hmm. And so then...
And this is the Wrigleyville location?
This is the location, yeah, on Clark Street in Wrigleyville, yeah. In the midst of... I mean, back then it was very different. Right. We can get into that too. That neighborhood has changed. Justin's... how long have you been with us, Justin? A couple... Like almost...
It's getting close to a year now. I've just been with Demo's since the beginning of this year, January 2018. And the initial thing that brought me in was, excuse me, was as simple as this. I'm vegan as well.
Cool.
And I said, I want to work at a restaurant where I can eat pizza all day and stick with my diet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I went to apply for a job. I thought it'd be a very simple look at the website for a few minutes, familiarize myself with the Demo story. And then I realized that there were just chapters and chapters of the Demo's manifesto listed at demospizza.com. And so I ended up spending probably 2 hours reading all about the different values, the triple bottom line, where we put planet and people along with profit. And it's just been great ever since. I was getting into it because I wanted to cook. I decided I had great opportunity here to do all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I've been given the opportunity to work with our donations. I'm given a budget to work with local organizations that represent our purposeful passions. That's art, that is education, and that is cyclist advocacy as well, since all of our delivery riders are on bikes for the most part. Sometimes weather is just crazy and we don't want them to skid out, but it's been really a wonderful learning experience and taught me that the food industry could be so much more than just stacking up tickets.
So I've been working in food since I was 18, and I still work in food, and I'm almost 30. So I think that it is so important to foster a sense of like giving a shit about the people that work for you, because it is both so easy to care and also so easy to not care. Like, just little things that you can do on both ends to just like, and so the fact that, you know, your delivery drivers are all cyclists, so why not be purposeful and intentional about caring about other people who cycle, mm-hmm. so that you can better understand what makes their job easier and what makes their job more enjoyable and safer. Well, like, and that's awesome.
It's also, you know, I find it fascinating because it really speaks to a culture of Chicago that I sometimes forget about, that really was thriving, especially when I first moved here, which, like, you know, the Wicker Park of a decade ago.
Yeah.
And the Lakeview of a decade ago. And that is such an interesting, it's one of the reasons why I love being able to support businesses like Demos that hold that, not just in practice, but like, well, in practice and in like intention. I think that's interesting. I'm curious for you, like, what has, because I know you were mentioning this too, like, what has that experience been like being in Chicago in neighborhoods that have changed so much in a decade and trying to hold on to the culture in which you started it.
Yeah, well, I to finish the history, because it'll kind of all tie together here. After we changed to Demos, we also built another store. Probably just 6 months later, we began construction or so, and that was in the Wicker Park neighborhood, which mm-hmm. is why obviously you brought that up. And those are two neighborhoods. I mean, I suppose change is one of those things that's ever present, right? So mm-hmm. you could say everything's kind of changing, but those two neighborhoods in particular,
yeah,
especially Wrigleyville in the last, you know, 2 years or so, and Wicker Park over the last five have been, you know, I mean, absolutely crazy with the amount of money that's been going in, the level of development that's been taking place. So I think our goal has always been, and why sort of we exist, is to be a place for each of the communities that we're a part of. So the store in Wrigleyville, we want it to be a part of the community that's there. And so for us, it's been interesting because on one hand, it's nice to see investment coming into a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's actually really refreshing, to be honest, because prior to that, there was not much community that was there. In the past probably 4 years, all of the community that was there got gutted in preparation for the new. So, and I'm talking about like things like I.O. You remember I.O. that mm-hmm. was there? That was a huge cultural part of that neighborhood. We would have people coming in. It's like a perfect date. You go, you grab a slice. We were BYOB. You could go in and see a comedy show. Yeah. You know, like, we would have people come for pizza on both ends of the shows. Or if they had classes, it was such an integral part of the community, and we did a lot of work with them. At one point, doing improv and eating Demos pizza were like almost synonymous, and we had so many people on our staff that were improvisers. Cool. So Demos pizzas were all about the community, and so the it's been very interesting to see this transition take place in Lakeview, because like I said, it's exciting that there's more money going in, but because that means that there's at least some sort of community that before didn't really exist, you know, it got gutted. And so I'm at least excited that something's happening now, whereas before there was like a good 4 years where not much was taking place.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So yeah. So when did Demos originally open, or when did you bring Ian's down here?
So that was 2008. And then we rebranded in 2000. We started vegan in 2009. And Demos was 2012.
Wow.
And the Wicker Park store was 2013.
It's one of those things where, like, when you think about like what the last 10 years in Chicago has been like, it's been such a like fast moving, the, you know, we've talked with a few different like urban planners specifically about like the nature of development and how, because, you know, not all development is like, it doesn't have, like, development does not have to displace.
It does not.
And that, I think, is an interesting thing to see the times in the last, like, because there the waves of it are, it's fascinating. And it's something that, like, we are always interested in kind of, like, understanding, and there are other episodes of the podcast where we do that.
Well, so what I'm interested in is, so you have been very mindful throughout changes, you know, throughout the changes in communities that you've settled in have occurred. And you mentioned this, one of your core tenets is your, not three pillars, but your business model is very intentional. Would you mind talking about that?
Yeah, so that's our triple bottom line.
Yes, 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 yes.
Nice.
With people, planet, and profit, mm-hmm. again. And this involves really everyone in the operation to actually start with the profit line, which is very important, because if you're not turning a profit, good luck staying in the neighborhood.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But we also practice open book financing, which is something else that drew me to Demos.
That's radical.
Yeah, so I took the time to go get a business degree from University of Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And after a year or so in the corporate world, I just decided I could not do it. So to be able to come to Demos and be able to still utilize those skills and also be given the freedom to treat everybody that comes into the store like a neighbor, like family even, mm-hmm. is something that is certainly, it makes it a lot easier to come in every day.
So open book financing, that is exactly what it sounds like. That basically, if anyone is like, "How you doing?" you're just like, "Here's how we're doing."
Any Demos employee has access to our books. Just yesterday, we were discussing our profit and loss from September, and everyone is encouraged to get as involved as they'd like.
That's amazing, because there have been so many restaurants that I've been involved in where you're like, I feel like things are going well, but the managers are always in a bad mood. So like I think that's really refreshing, and it also takes such a weight off of the employees. Whenever I've been told like exactly how we're doing, it motivates me to, as an employee, it motivates me to, if we're not doing well, like, it, you know, because I'm in the front lines as someone talking to people and hearing what they, because, you know, customers always have suggestions of ways that, you know, I'm gluten-free. Could you have something that's gluten-free? Oh, I'm vegan, but I, you know, don't like this, blah, blah, blah. It's, so I think that kind of opening that conversation of like, hey, like this month we didn't do well, and having people who are there to be like, maybe if we try this, like, that's incredible.
Well, and I think it's the piece that's fascinating to me is that I think what it speaks to is your resume, I guess, with this industry, in that you started from, did you say part-time?
Yeah, I mean, I was just a college student slinging pizza.
Right, and so, like, to go through that and then to go to all the different, like, hierarchy, like, stratifications, and then come through and... But the thing that's fascinating is I think there are people that go through that path, right, in an industry, and then come out of it and then don't make decisions like that. Can you put into words, or is it something like, is it a personal, like your personal,
like why do we have it? The reason we have it is because I think it gives agency to the people that have the ability to make the most impact on the business's top and bottom line. Management and leadership are really important, but at the end of the day, it's the customer service experience and the quality of the pizza that is going to determine how our sales go.
Yeah.
That's it. Right? Like, and so when you give the information to everybody that indicates how well we're doing, it gives them a chance to take a look at that information, think about what they have done themselves that day or that week or that month, and any changes that you've made, and see how that's affected, right? So it really makes it so that you can truly learn from your mistakes or from your efforts. And I think that's really powerful. It's a level of transparency, and it really, I guess you ask why. I just kind of makes sense. Like I couldn't see it happening any other way. I would never run a business another way, because you're leaving people in the dark, and you're asking them to do things that they're not going to understand.
And the reason why I asked that too is, like, I feel like a lot of people that are not billionaires, let's say, know why you would do something like that. Like, it makes sense. Like, and so it's that to me is an interesting thing to, like, it's nice to have a conversation where everyone can be involved in it, you know, like at all levels of a of an industry or of a business. And I think that's really rad. I don't actually have an actual question, but I do actually have like my next thing I know I want to talk about. But basically, I'm just like not wanting to get into just talking about pizza.
I do have a question related to this. Yeah. You mentioned that while you were at Ian's, you learned about how to build a training manual. I'm interested how I'm basically I'm interested if like you're doing anything unique or if there's like any particular. If you're bringing any of this, like, openness and any... I'm sure you are, but, if like, what level of openness and transparency you're bringing to the Demos training program?
Well, I think... I mean, all of the... Let me clarify also.
Sure.
I mentioned building a training manual because the first time I did it was when I was in college at Ian's, because that's... I looked at where that business was, mm-hmm. and it didn't have anything.
Yeah.
And... it's like we need some sort of structure or system if there's going to be any sort of scale here. Right. And so let's build that. And so I did it for the first time then.
Gotcha.
I learned actually from a company that does a lot of really interesting stuff in the food business called Zingerman's. It's in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Zingerman's is incredible.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible. They very much paved the way for a lot of sort of these practices that I'm talking about. I went to a couple of their seminars. And which I'm not sure if you're familiar, but they, besides actually serving amazing food and having a bunch of really cool restaurants, they have a consulting arm of their business. And
one of our business members, SmackDab up in Rogers Park, is currently fundraising to be a part of their management training program.
And also,
program.
I feel like I know I've been mentioned Zingerman's too in the last couple months, like multiple times.
And Angela used to work there.
Right.
We have a food podcast and our host used to work at Zingerman's.
Got it. Yeah. I mean, it's an institution
yeah.
in Ann Arbor.
Yeah.
And so I learned there. I took what I learned from there. I took from my own experiences and we created the first iteration. And as time has gone on, it's changed over and over and over, mm-hmm. you know, to integrate the new material. So, you know, when we talk about open book finance, when we first opened here in Chicago, it was the same thing. I thought, okay, well, I need to make sure everybody knows what the numbers are. And doing that was, back then, we had a old school register. We didn't have a fancy POS right. system. There was no Grubhub. You know, it was like a very different world. But so everything that, all of the transparency took place by us, you know, making Excel spreadsheets and printing things out. And so obviously, as time has gone on, the way that we're able to display the information has changed. So the way that we can teach it has changed. So we just slowly upgrade all of our systems to match sort of the innovations that take place.
How do you best like keep yourself open to that flexibility? Is that a weird question? Like,
no, a large sense of curiosity, I think, is awesome. My answer.
Yeah,
we actually talked about this yesterday at a staff meeting that we had. One of our values is innovation, and so when you're constantly pushing for that, and you say like that it matters, I mean it's hard not to see that innovation is important because it's happening all around us at such an increasingly mm-hmm. rapid pace. That I think that helps when people see it and you can kind of put it in context of, hey, here's how we're doing. What else should we do? What are we missing?
Yeah.
Right? That can help that happen. Now, on the flip side, and this has definitely happened, you can innovate too much and too fast, right? And that's Demos actually has also you know, suffered because of some of that. Because sometimes people come in and they think, oh, hey, you know what? We need, like, we should do this. And it's very easy to come up with new ideas. But sometimes if it's not broke, you shouldn't mm-hmm. fix it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I think, and this is the great segue for me because I think about that balance a lot. And the reason why I like that question specifically, I was like, how am I going to ask this? Because it's just like, some of it is like such common sense level stuff of maybe it's just like the generation that we find ourselves in where it's like we all recognize like after the internet, like we knew the whole world was going to change.
Totally different.
You know? Yeah. Like, and you see that in so many ways. And the piece of all of this that I find really interesting is it for me, this shows up in the pizza. Because, and I know this is such a weird, like, thing to use as a metaphor, but, like, pizza making is a traditional art form. There are rules. Like, there you can fuck it up. Like, if you don't do it right, if you don't do it the way that, like, every Italian grandmother has done it, it doesn't work. But you then take that and apply it to a very now state of mind, which is this idea of innovation and flexibility and, like, let's make new toppings. Like, let's go for it. Like, let's do a spicy red sauce. Let's do barbecue sauce. Let's do mac and cheese. Like, it's all of these things. And, you know, like, coming from a Long Island pizza person, it's the most traditional, but I know good pizza places that do slices that are pushing, like, you know, the one that's been going on Long Island, like, conservative, like, traditionalist, like, Italian, Catholic, like, pizza places, is they're finally bringing in, like, buffalo chicken, which I think is, like, they're getting the, there's a degree of, like.
Which Daniel's dad will not.
He's not having.
No.
Yeah, and I think that metaphor, and I feel like I'm going through a breakthrough this moment of, like, this metaphor that I talk about all the time.
I think you're onto something.
Well, we talk about it all the time in the arts, because especially with opera, and it's funny that it's opera because opera is also Italian. Like, this whole idea of, like, balancing the traditional with, you know, in art making, there are so many people that get trained in a form, but then they lack something that's so crucial and of the moment for people that don't have training. And then it can go vice versa. Like, this whole thing, it's a balance. And I think that it's fascinating to me. You know, I'm sure that there are other examples of this, but I think that what I always latched onto about Demos is, like, ideologically, it's finding that balance, but also, like, in practice, you've found ways, things to latch onto and structures to build that you've built that then carry out that ideology into praxis, like into actual tangible practice. And I guess, like, my question for you is how do you ride that balance? Like, is it something that you think about? And then even let's go with the specifics of it. Let's talk about, like, when you're thinking about the directions you want to push with recipe making and with the pizza, like, where is that, does that balance kind of come into play?
Yeah, I guess, you know, what I was struck by as you were describing that is that it can feel like a juxtaposition to have such classic pies and have to execute those things so consistently over and over and over and over again, but still at the same time say, hey, we're about innovation and actually push forward the options in the pizza that we put on.
And yet we do execute so well.
Yeah.
And I have the proof in these grumpy old men who come in and declare that they're from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
And they say, what is all this fancy crap?
Yeah.
I want pepperoni. And I say, well, let us make you a fresh pepperoni.
Right.
And every time, they just give me a look of, okay, you were right. You were right.
Yeah. You did it.
Every once in a while, I'll convince them to try a wacky slice afterwards.
Yeah.
So I guess to answer the question, so we live in that balance. That's just the truth. I think when you're trying a pizza place for the first time, you got to just get a slice, right? Which is cheese. That's you have to start there.
And I love that you have a vegan cheese slice.
Yeah.
I just had to, like, you can just get a straight, because that's such a, like, yeah.
Because if you can't execute that, like, what can you execute? So there is definitely a juxtaposition between you have to execute consistently and make sure that everything is consistent, but you also have to push the boundaries because, at least for us, our brand is sort of like its essence is maybe like neighborly unconventionalism. Mm-hmm. We're neighbors. Like, we want the people that come in to be, like, our friends. Because we care about them. I mean, we're going to care about them whether they like us or not. That's up to them, I suppose. But we want that. And, of course, there's that unconventionalism. It's reflected in the pizza. It's kind of reflected in all the people that are on the staff, that are on part of the team. Everyone's a little bit, I don't know. There's something about working at a pizza shop. It's, like, a little bit quirky. So we have to ride that balance. And I think it's constantly, you know, sometimes we swing and we miss. And it's like, nobody liked that slice. And that's okay. You know, like, you move on. You keep innovating, right? You keep trying.
And I want to kind of, like, flesh this out more. you take that experimental, you take like wacky slices, and then you make them standards when they do really well.
Absolutely. Chicken and waffles is the best example of that.
Mm-hmm.
That was, we were on the Travel Channel for mm-hmm. Chicken and Waffles, and like they were like, you guys make this. And it first started just as a, hey, you know what? What if we tried this chicken as a waffle slice? And we just did it for a weekly special and it exploded. People loved it. And mm-hmm. so on the menu.
Oh my God.
But
that sounds so good.
Yeah. But I guess the other thing is that the innovation can't just stop with pizza. That's something that is, I mentioned sort of my background. I am not a chef. I love food and I love pizza and I like to try all the new places and I like to see what people are doing in that industry, but I am not someone that like creates the recipes or creates the pizzas. I know what pizza will do well and what flavor profiles will work together, but I don't come from that background. So I also think that the innovation has to happen inside of sort of the business and how it operates as well. So we're talking about integrating the open book management stuff. We're talking about inserting a triple bottom line and teaching people how to use those philosophies to reach success. That's innovation in itself. I remember Google Docs when it came out the first time that I remember anyways was mm-hmm. 2010. I jumped on that immediately.
Me too.
Started adding all of our meetings in there. That's how everybody's going to document everything. We're going to share it with everyone. And it just, I didn't know how big it was going to get lit. But obviously, you see where it goes now. And so we've tried so often to take technology and make it work for us. And that's sort of like, that's the other, you know, piece where innovation plays a huge role for us.
And, well, and that's fascinating too, right? Because, like, you could have said, oh, it's going to be Adobe platforms. You know what I mean? Which, like, I love Adobe platforms, but,
yeah,
like,
great.
They're expensive. Like, yeah, and
very
that,
much so.
That degree of thinking about the accessibility and the affordability of it, too, is, like, it's all this balance of that and the other.
You know what's sticking with me? The fact that you introduced a vegan program in 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one had a vegan program in 2009.
No. Well, so I want to, this is the,
we did. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, like, we it started in 2009 as just sort of like tasting every Thursday we did it, and at the beginning we had people sign up, we emailed everybody, and they all came.
Oh, cool!
And then slowly it evolved into, let's just put vegan pizza on the menu permanently, and now we absolutely do, and people always come in for it. We even did last winter, we did a whole bunch of vegan tastings, like not pizza, just like a custom menu of like mm-hmm. six different items.
Oh, cool.
And we did that about, I don't know, maybe like four or five times. So it's definitely, so that, I mean, yeah, that's
are
great.
Are you doing that again?
We are, and okay. I will let you know.
Yeah, cool.
Please do. Well, and I want to speak to, too, the thing that I think is interesting, something we talk about a lot, is what it means to be making what you're making in Chicago. We talk about that with different genres, and I think it's specifically interesting with pizza. We're like, Chicago is a pizza city. But I also think the thing that's fascinating is, in so many ways, you've found ways to thrive in being the alternative pizza and being the alternative. And so I kind of, I'm curious, like, what has that been something that you've thought about and like been like, okay, how do we work not doing deep dish or however you want to think about that like alternative thing? And then what's kind of been like your keys to success in that way?
Well, it's not, I mean, how it's definitely a pizza city. There's no question about that. For us, I think that what we did is we felt confident in who we were, what we stood for, and we just put that out. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if you execute what it is that you do well and people like what that is, you know, we're not doing, even though we're putting macaroni and cheese on pizza, that's not really that crazy. I mean, maybe it's a little bit weird, but at the beginning, but it's not that much. So you do that well, you do good customer service well, and I think, you know, there's sort of like a spot for everything. I mean, think about how many different cuisines exist in Chicago. It's not that hard.
Mm-hmm.
Justin mentioned the guy from Brooklyn. There's also the guys that come in that are like Chicago, born and raised, and they're like, that's not pizza, right? So that we get that as well. But for us, I mean, what would you say? It's like an opportunity to convert someone to say, hey, yeah, but try it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. I have probably once or twice a week somebody walk into the store and ask me if we have deep dish. And I will be happy to list a few deep dish recommendations for them. There are some great restaurants out there. Shout out to Chicago House of Za, the best vegan deep dish.
Yes, we featured them on the website. They're fantastic.
They're amazing. And the nicest people. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just it's an opportunity to sell a different kind of experience to somebody. If they have been all about deep dish time and time again, say, open up your mind, try one of these new wacky slices. We've got every month, we've got different specials rotating through. If there's something you aren't a huge fan of, wait a few weeks and maybe it's the best pizza you've ever seen. If we want to talk about vegan pies, we just finished up our vegan al pastor special. We did have a regular version as well with the pork on there.
I
cannot believe you missed the al pastor because I would seriously, at the end of almost every shift, I would make our cooks like cook up some al pastor for me.
Well, there was a summer where you were working.
I was on the opening crew of Fairgrounds, like right around the corner from your Wicker Park shop.
And we were in that location probably.
I was there full time.
3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
Like, just like.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's, well, and what it is it's like, you know, it's a $4 vegan like meal. You know, it's like you can't beat that.
You want to talk about affordability? Let me rephrase it. I want to talk about affordability.
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
One of the things that I love about pizza, I would say my favorite thing, is that it is built to share. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you go back to, it's so interesting. I feel like I keep saying old axioms, and I don't know, they still always apply, right?
But what I was
going to say is, like, when you break bread with someone, you make them your friend. Mm-hmm. And so the pizza itself, like, you have to do that. You got to cut it up into slices and everyone gets a piece. It's like it's sort of a nice metaphor for life in general. So that's one thing. And then the other thing, what it has to do with affordability, is that also then makes it able to be fairly inexpensive, and that makes it accessible. And that's always been important to us. Could we make a pizza that costs much, much, much more? Mm-hmm. Definitely. But that's just not, that would not be Demos, right? That mm-hmm. that's not very neighborly. That doesn't like feel like, you know, part of our ethos, right? Mm-hmm. We want to be able to feed the masses. Pizza's not a pretentious food.
Yeah.
I will say, because, you know, I'm not like an outright deep dish hater, but the idea of the slice shop is just something that is so needed in the Midwest. You know, like that, exactly that nature of like, because that's what it is. Like when you walk into a place and the slices are out, it's like, and on top of that, like then you can get a full pie and it feeds like a family or like you and your friends. Like it's this balance of like, it's so flexible. Like it can exist in so many spaces, but then it's also like, that's always what it's been.
That's always what it's been, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'd say as much as the neighborhoods, especially Wrigleyville, has been changing, there are still certain fundamental things about it, such as baseball and bars. And that is where the slice just comes such in handy. If you're going to go see a 3-hour ball game, why wouldn't you stop in for a couple slices, bring them in with you? Come out afterwards, same thing. You're over at the bar across the street, you can come over for a slice between rounds. Go back for another beer, come back for another slice.
Which does happen often.
Oh yes, I love to have fun with our customers who sometimes 4 or 5 times within a day. There's also a lot of bar crawls that go on over in Wrigleyville.
Oh, yeah.
I challenge people to come back 4 or 5 times during that. I mean, yeah. I don't know how they're going to survive all that drinking if they don't get some pizza in them anyways.
So I want to switch over to talking about your, because we talked a little bit about the vegan specials, but your specials in general are inspired and often super timely. The one that always sticks out in my head is last summer's, was that last summer? Yeah. At some point there was a Rick and Morty slice, which like, was amazing. And I'd love to hear you talk about balancing kind of like the tongue-in-cheek, like oh my god, they have a Rick and Morty slice, and like the and there's novelty to that, but then actually getting it and it being incredible. Like, what is the process for that? How do you take the zeitgeist and put it on a pizza?
Yeah, so I wish Steve was here. Steve's our culinary curator, and he comes up with all the slices. We also have a couple other really, really talented chefs that can mm-hmm. do just that. But I think that what it starts with always is what is going to be a good pizza. And when you start there, it's not so hard to sort of reverse engineer just about anything, right? Like, we've deconstructed enough meals and reconstructed them in pizza form that it's not it's I don't know, it's like clockwork at this point, right?
Yeah.
So, but you have to start with what flavors are going to work well together, and then also what you just said, like, yeah, like, what is it that's going on right now that, like, we want to, you know, show that, hey, yeah, we're into that too. And so, yeah, that's part of the process.
Yeah, and I guess I would say that a lot of our pizzas are based in, like, concepts, like the al pastor or an elote. I can say to somebody, this is a pizza, but it's like the Mexican street food in elotes. Or this is a pizza, but it's like a hamburger. For example, right now we actually have one of our specials is the Perfect Pizza, which has been inspired by Chance the Rapper's movie, Slice.
Nice.
Created by Austin Vesely, who's been doing Chance the Rapper's music videos and all this for many years. So it's very exciting for us to be able to collaborate on a project like that. And again, something that's very true to Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's a huge part of it. Absolutely. It's like something that's born and raised in Chicago, both Chance and Austin, and like what they created, they're really proud of. So it's really fun for us to be able to make the perfect pizza. It's on the, if you've seen that movie, I just came out, go check it out.
We're gonna
be doing an exclusive with them. We got some of the Perfect pizza boxes printed just for this.
Nice.
And so we're gonna sell that pizza. That's the, for Halloween, because it is a little bit of a scary movie. It's Halloween inspired. So that's kind of the jam there.
What a, Chance is having like a busy month.
that guy doesn't stop.
Yeah, dude, yeah.
Chance is having an extended moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so y'all mentioned that you have some cool events coming up. Would you mind talking about those?
Well, let's see. That is the most exciting thing coming up. This is, we sort of just like, at least in Wrigleyville, where I'm most familiar with, this almost becomes our off season as well.
Mm-hmm.
So in the short term, we're sort of catching our breath, assessing how everything went down
mm-hmm.
over the last few months. And once we've gotten all that taken care of, then we're very excited to get back into all these different events, getting people to come out, even though it's 20 degrees outside and nobody wants to go. Like, we're going to have reasons for people to come out and have a good time with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess one of the fun things that we're about to break ground on is, we talked about innovation, but I want to touch base on that real quickly again, because in 2012, we jumped on Grubhub, and we started to get orders from there, which was great. But then maybe 2015 or so, we started to see a lot more money go into the food/tech space, starting with 2015 and really ramping up in 2016 and 17,
mm-hmm.
Where you just see people trying to, disrupt. There was air quotes if you didn't see that. Could you hear that through the mic?
Yeah.
Got it. The food space. And so that happened in the form of, Grubhub was the first, but then Uber Eats came along, Caviar, Postmates, mm-hmm. DoorDash. There's probably a number of other smaller mm-hmm. ones, but those are sort of some of the bigger players. And I looked at that scene and I thought about the amount of money that we were giving to those companies, and it was a lot. I mean, it's very expensive.
Well, and that the consumers give, like when we order like DoorDash or whatever, we have to factor in an extra like $10 just for fees, and mm-hmm. it's wild.
Yeah. So we didn't like that. And we thought, you know what we should do? What I did is I calculated how much money we spent for the two stores over the course of a year, and I did the math on it. And building our own online ordering platform was actually less for just 1 year than it would have been to keep using them. And I thought, you know what, let's build our own. And so in 2014, we launched the first iteration. We launched a sort of a second one in 2015. And have done minor improvements since, but we still are on some of those other platforms to sort of acquire new customers. Because let's be real, that's how people are finding food, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know that people always realize what the cost of that is.
Yeah.
Right? Because the cost is that it costs the business a large amount of money for you to find them. And because a lot of these tech companies have so much money, they can build a really, really superior product, the digital product, mm-hmm. that makes it easy to reorder, that makes it easy to have your favorites.
Right.
And so the barrier to getting food has dropped enormously versus if you're going to, you know, a restaurant that doesn't have their own platform, you're going to call them up or, you know, whatever it's going to be. So you're basically cutting out 20% or so from each order. Mm-hmm. And you can understand that what the impact that will have. So, yeah. Like I said, we built our own. And that was really exciting. And we run probably about half of the deliveries come through there, which is great. But we're going to be launching sort of like our third generation of our own online ordering system in the next couple of months. And so that's something that I'm really excited about because, like I said, there's so many innovations, but I want to bring them to sort of like the, right. you know, the local small business.
Right, and I find that a lot of people, it seems like the local cafes and stuff that we're starting to get to know in the last year are thinking about finally straddling that, and the fact that you've been doing it since 2014 is awesome. The other piece, though, I think, though, is I can't imagine that is not an idea that doesn't cross a restaurant owner's mind. But again, it's just that, like, that degree of putting it into action, that like being able to be like, this is how we're going to experiment with it, and then making it an experiment, and then it being established enough to where you can like basically like announce it and push it, and but then because then it gives you the freedom to ride the wave of wanting both to bring in new business from the like traditional spaces, not even, you know what I mean, though, like the big boxes, if you want to call it that I think. Yeah, I mean, I don't entirely have a question.
Well, this is where I'm rather conflicted on the matter of like all these third-party delivery services. You talked about all the fees that are charged. That's a middleman extracting
right.
value where maybe it wasn't necessary. But the exposure we are getting from it is yeah. phenomenal. So you can only promote yourself so much if you're not in the proper space where the eyeballs are.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any distinctions coming soon from Uber Eats or right. Postmates or whatever. However, you mentioned smaller cafes and businesses looking to get involved with this. I think it could be fantastic for them. At the same time, the thought of an independent contractor with no insurance driving a Big Mac over to my house just for, you know, a small tip, just has me thinking about all kinds of exploitation.
Absolutely. Like, this is a problem. Like there, like, this is a huge, complicated, and so here's the actual question. Like, when you recognize that, because I think that that's kind of where I'm coming at, is I think a lot of people recognize that it's a very complicated, difficult, like, problem. Like, what is your drive to go at it?
Yeah. You know? Well, I would say that there are positives and negatives on both sides of some of those larger platforms. I'm going to try to deconstruct it because I have got sure. a lot of views on the matter here. So the first one is that those platforms, the ones that offer delivery services that have essentially have a whole bunch of either bicycle riders or cars on demand, the benefit that they create is that if people want to work for a certain amount of time, they can. So that's one benefit. The other benefit to the restaurant is that now the restaurant, if let's say the restaurant doesn't offer delivery at all, if they jump on one of those platforms, all of a sudden they have access to a whole bunch of people that can come pick up their food and drop it off. And even if it charges them 25%, hey, those are still sales that they didn't have to hire anyone for, they didn't have to train anyone for, they didn't have to have that workforce, right? So there's definitely some positives that do exist as well. That I think, and that's obviously why it's succeeded, right? The downsides, and I think the challenge, has much more to do with sort of the, I don't know, the economy and sort of how public policy is shaped around how some of these tech platforms operate. And I think that's where there's some room for improvement, right? So I think the biggest problem, we're getting into politics for sure here. I think one of the things that I wish could exist is that these people that are independent contractors and are working for a, you know, for any of the delivery services companies, I wish that there was the health exchange was a little bit more robust, right? And that it existed a little bit stronger for them so that they had a little bit of a better safety net. Because right now they're really, because we have this independent contractor versus working for somebody, working for a company, it's like the policy hasn't caught up to the reality of the number of people mm-hmm. that are working under this contract. And I'm not saying, I did just say that was one solution, but really that's the problem, that the policy hasn't caught up to the speed at which tech has moved. And there are a variety of solutions that can exist for that. There's a lot of different directions to go, but it's just not being addressed. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening is it just continues, and sort of the status quo is maintained, and so that can have some negative ramifications for sure.
They should be bringing Demos Pizza into city council meetings. Every city council meeting, everybody should be sat around just like a bunch of pizza.
Okay, so on that subject, we did. There's a couple of things. In 2014, the mayor was trying to get through the minimum wage hike, and we actually hosted at Demos a number of like small table discussions around the minimum wage. We were a bunch of businesses that said, "Hey, listen, raising the minimum wage is something that can be done," but we were also saying, "But it needs to be done in phases, and you know, here's some things to take into consideration." And so we hosted a sort of a roundtable discussion on that matter, and then. Maybe a little bit earlier, we also hosted a bunch of state legislators from both the Republican side of the aisle and the Democratic side of the aisle in Illinois to help. It was called Pizza and Pension Summit, because if you're familiar with the pension issue in the state of Illinois, it's absolutely atrocious, right? Mm-hmm. I will speak poorly about it for a moment, but you have so much of a balance that has been not paid, and they keep kicking it down mm-hmm. the road, and the interest payments are now so incredibly high, and you know that's gonna have a huge long term effect. And yeah. So, anyways, we hosted those two groups together. They ate pizza together, which was good, but I don't think they solved a problem.
And this is one reason I'm oh so thankful that Demos has hooked me up with that 401k.
That is another perk that we do give.
That's awesome. I wanna take a sharp turn here, and I wanna talk aesthetics. So when you walk into Demos Pizza, and I'm thinking specifically of the one in Wicker.
Sure.
There's an ever-changing, like, it looks different every time you go in. And I'm wondering if you could talk about the curation process of just the shitload of art that you have on the walls.
Yeah, so we have a program that's just it's called Artists of the Quarter. And we bring in artists that we really like, that we support. We let them put their art on our wall. We don't charge them anything to sell it. A lot of times they sell quite a bit of it. And I don't know, it's part of our purposeful passions. We have a space, like let's use it to showcase the creativity that exists in Chicago. We want to make sure people mm-hmm. know that it's there. You know, you really talk, there has been an increasing look because of the proliferation of Instagram of things like looking perfect. And I understand the value of Instagram and you know, it's nice for things to look pretty. I'm not against that mm-hmm. in any way, shape, or form. But I think that what we strive for is authenticity. And that's, you know, that's real. That's someone yeah. Someone decided, hey, I'm going to create something that I'm proud of, that I think is important. One of the Artists of the Quarters that we did was entirely artwork created by Demos Pizza employees. The entire wall, and it was all varied. It was so incredible. It was like, it was really, honestly, I felt like a great sense of pride to see all that and be like, we made that? Like, that's amazing. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I think that that's really cool. And I think that aesthetics as it relates to like being, you know, grammable or whatever, I think that you've kind of accomplished that in your own way, in a way that it does seem very authentic. It does seem very organic. You know, it. I think that you go into certain shops and you're like, oh, wow, no, like that sign, you know, is placed in just a way that if you stand right there and take your picture in front of it, that is purely an Instagram wall. But like the way that it is, it does read as just like, look at all this cool art, come on in for the pizza. Like but you did accomplish something that is also beautiful to look at. And I think that it just goes back to that balance you've figured out of like, yeah, this is just what you wanted it to look like, but it just so happens to look really cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Cool. Well, we have a few minutes left. The last thing we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for anything they have upcoming. Sometimes it's very obvious, like letting people know where they can find your wares, pizza wares, or any upcoming events. Otherwise, we really love hearing shout outs to other folks that are doing dope work, or any media that you're consuming, self-care or otherwise, movies, TV shows, books, stuff like that.
Cool. I'll begin a few things. We'll do the plug first. Please visit demospizza.com and click the order now button and order pizza from us anytime. Also, if you want to give us comments on things that you've seen that you really like or things you think we can improve, we are always listening. Comments at demospizza.com, email us, demospizza.com, order from us. In terms of things that I am consuming, I just got a new book, Brené Brown's new book. I don't know if you're familiar with her.
Yes, absolutely.
I forget the title now. I don't know the name of the book. Learning to Lead, Rising to Lead. I think it's something around those. It's a leadership book. She's great. She's all about self-discovery, so that's one thing. And in terms of things to plug, I won't plug anything else. I just would advocate for everybody to please go vote. Please go vote. That's really important. Politics matters. It affects our daily lives. Go vote. Thanks.
Yeah.
I'll echo that. Yes, please go to the polls. Please. As far as media that I'm consuming, well, I've had enough conversations about politics and philosophy at this point, which included somebody saying to me, you mean like Hunger Games, right? So I decided to finally begin reading Hunger Games. So shamelessly plowing through that right now. I'd also just like to shout out the people who are keeping me, I believe, incredibly informed right now is the Jimmy Dore Show on YouTube, cool. Graham Elwood, the political vigilante on YouTube, and Jamarl Thomas of the Progressive Soapbox on YouTube.
Hell yeah.
Awesome.
Cool. Rad.
Rocking the YouTube train there, all right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love YouTube content. I love in the same way the Google, like, doc platform is so smart, that's so accessible, and yeah. And also, I am really jealous. I wish that I were reading Hunger Games for the first time now.
Oh, wow, you're right. Justin, tell us, what's it like?
It is mind-blowing. Oh, also, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention thank you to the Edgewater Free Public Library, where I found it. Yeah, nice. Just walking down the street, and I said, oh my goodness, somebody left the Hunger Games here.
Yeah.
So I gotta find the books that I want to pay it forward with and get those in the box. But thank you, Edgewater, for hooking me up with the books.
Nice. Awesome.
Cool. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Dale Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. The first is to head over to scapimag.com. That's our website. We spell it scapimag.com. We're also on social media, on Facebook. We have a Facebook page called Scopy Magazine. We also have a Facebook group that we love and adore called Sounding Board, where we talk about local arts, local politics, a little bit of astrology memes, stuff like that. Otherwise, you can find us on Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr under Scopy Mag, spelled the same way as the website. And you can find the podcast, the one that you're listening to right now, Scopy Radio, in all podcast places, including Google Play, iTunes Podcasts, and Radio Public.
And as always, I'm here to talk about the importance of subscribing. If you head to our website, scopymag.com, and go to our subscribe page, there are a couple ways that you can do that. The first is to sign up for email blasts. This is huge because even though we post across social media platforms, Facebook buries our content. So if you want to see 100% of what we're doing and not just 30% of it, you should subscribe to those emails. The second thing you can do is become a member. For as little as $5 a month, you can help us keep our lights on and pay our artists. If you're in a position to do so, there are cool incentives associated with it. You should check it out. Also, if you are a business or an entity or just have something fun to say and want to advertise with us, please feel free to reach out to us at scopymag@gmail.com. So, give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Cool. Thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.